Nathan Hubbard. Spring has sprung, the birds are chirping, and the pop girls are pop girling.
Nora Princiati, the pop girls are girling. What does that even mean? You wrote this trailer. I do not talk like this, Nora.
But I try so hard to teach you.
Well, here's what I do know. This spring is packed with new releases from some of the biggest pop stars in the world, including our girl, Taylor Swift.
And every single album is back to cover it all.
We'll, of course, break down every angle on the Tortured Poets Department, out April 19th. But we'll also cover new music from Beyonce, Dua Lipa, Maggie Rogers, Kacey Musgraves, Ariana Grande, and whoever else just might surprise us this spring.
It's Pop Girl Spring on every single album.
New episodes starting March 28th, just in time for Cowboy Carter, up through Dua Lipa's Radical Optimism in May.
So subscribe to every single album on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And welcome to another episode of Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we got a friend, a brother, a partner, and I will honestly tell you that in politics there, when I first got elected and when I was 21, 22 years old, I used to think that there were a lot of brilliant people in politics, and Lord, I was disappointed. I can honestly say now that even with the lack of talent in the political spectrum, Terrence Woodbury is one of the most talented brothers we have, young, old, black, white, in between. But he is just utterly brilliant. He's the only person me and Shermichael Singleton actually agree about as being talented. None other than Terrence Woodbury. What's going on, brother? How are you?
What's up, brother? Thanks for having me. And it's good to be in good conversation with my good Morehouse brothers, you and Shermichael, man.
There you go. So look, you're a friend to the show. We usually ask people, how did you end up where you are? Walk us through the arc of their career. But you've been here before. We know who you are, what you're talking about. Let's jump right into it. What are black voters telling us about this election, and are the campaigns listening?
Oh, man. You know, Hit Strategies has been, we started the company specifically to correct the record on the voters that have been misrepresented and underrepresented in research. And right now, black voters are being both misrepresented and underrepresented. You know, I look at polls like the New York Times last month that says that 20% of black folks are voting for Donald Trump. A week later, Wall Street Journal put out a poll that said 30% of black men were voting for Donald Trump. I got to call bullshit on all of that, Bakari. That's just not what we're seeing in our data. That's not what I'm hearing when I talk to voters. In fact, you know, if you only talk to 100 or so black folks in your poll, then if 10 or 20 of those 100 folks are strange and giving you strange answers, then you got a 20% discrepancy. And that's why, you know, we just have much larger sample size. So when we talk to 1,200 black folks and ask them who they're going to vote for, we see about 9 to 12% saying that they're going to vote for Donald Trump, as opposed to the 20 to 30% that we're seeing in public polling.
That sounds like some honesty there. That sounds like a bit different than the salacious headlines that people want you to read. What issues are black voters telling you matter to them? And this is what drives me nuts. So I say it all the time and people think I'm lying, but so we'll listen to the person who knows the science and the math. But, you know, I always say that it's black folk are more than criminal justice reform. We care about the economy. We care about those things that matter and how you frame abortion. Talk about those issues that matter to black voters. And do you think that campaigns seem to be responsive?
Yeah, look, the number one issue that we are hearing from black folks right now, it's, they're, even though they're saying economy, Bakari, what we're learning in the focus groups and in the deeper qualitative research, because you got to get beyond the kind of binary answer of, if I give you five issues, pick the one that's most important to you. So, you know, we do a lot of qualitative focus groups almost every night. And what we're learning is that when black folks are saying economy, what they're really talking about is cost. This is a cost election. It's not an economy election. Which is why economic indicators like record number job creation and record low unemployment rate and record high stock market, all of these economic indicators don't seem to be moving the needle, because what black folks are telling us is the cost is too damn high. And so when we look at their top five issues, Number one is the cost of living. I want to be clear to, you know, the messengers and the politicals that are listening. Not inflation, cost, right? Inflation is a economic phenomenon that's caused by, they're talking about the gas cost, the cost of education, the cost of housing, cost of healthcare. In fact, I had someone in a focus group tell me that when his father died last year, that X percent of their of his Social Security inheritance, where the Social Security that his father left him had been taxed so high that he didn't have anything left. I mean, the cost of dying is too high, you know? And so that's the number one issue. And the good thing is that we're making a lot of progress on cost, things like capping credit card fees, capping all junk fees, like getting to these student loans. We're getting to the cost of things, but we gotta shift our message from economy to cost. After cost, though, it's crime and violence.
Explain, break that down a little bit, because I think people oftentimes are misconstrued when we actually talk about the fact that Black folk care, particularly in these larger cities, care about violence and having safe communities.
Yeah, you know, so a couple things on this. First, we have to broaden the conversation from crime to public safety, because that's what Black folks are talking about. They're not just talking about break-ins and shootings. They're talking about feeling safe and living safe in their environments and their communities. And sometimes, you know, that requires us to reject the false choice of more police or less police brutality. Or, I mean, that's just, these binary terms are not how Black folks are thinking about this. And so they are beginning to approach issues of public safety with a more compassionate lens. When we ask what is contributing the most to increasing crime, and we give them a list of 10 options, more police is number 7. The first 5 options are, you know, addiction, drug abuse, not enough drug abuse counseling, not enough affordable housing, not enough economic opportunity, right? These things that are considered alternatives to police, but that Black folks are beginning to prioritize to not only address crime, but to prevent it from happening in the first place.
Is there a Black Trump vote?
There's absolutely a Black Trump vote, and you know them. You know these folks. Everybody that's listening knows these folks. So I want to be clear about this, man.
There's one in every barbershop. I need to go. I'm going tomorrow. So you go to every single Black barbershop. You multiply that times one. There's one in each one of them. You know, there's always that antagonist who sits in there and talks about Trump this, Trump that, Trump in the third, just to be a little different.
Yeah, so look, we are seeing some increase in this Trump vote. It's, again, it's not the 20 or 30% increase that we're seeing in public polling, but it's going up. There are, you know, I was in focus groups in Miami-Dade a few months ago, and 6 out of 8 of the Black men in that focus group said that their lives were better under Donald Trump. That doesn't mean all 6 of those Black men are voting for Donald Trump, but those are the kinds of things that we're competing with. And honestly, Bakari, I'm starting to wonder and suspect that when people say, especially Black people, say their lives were better under Donald Trump, I think what they're really saying is that their lives were better before the pandemic. And so I'm trying to get underneath that a little bit more. Again, we got to get past what they're saying and get to what they're feeling. That's part of what we're trying to get right. But yeah, that Trump vote is going up. I don't expect him, again, it ain't going to be 20 or 30%, but it's going to be more than he got in 2020.
Let's talk about Black men. What are we telling pollsters we want to see in the next White House? What are we telling them from the government in general?
I'm glad you brought this up, Bakari, because, you know, we have political folks that consume a lot of this political information have heard a lot about the gender gap between Black men and Black women. You've talked about it on your show. I've been on here to talk about it. When, frankly, what we're seeing in the polls, and I talked about this the last time I was here, it's not the gender gap between Black folks that's concerning me so much. That's like a 2020 story, a 2016 story. It's the issue is evolving, because right now we see a 14-point gap between Black men and Black women support for, I'm sorry, 14-point gap in who Black men and Black women say that they'll vote for president. We see a 41-point gap when we look at who younger Black voters versus who older Black voters say that they're going to vote for president. So we got to start moving beyond the gender gap and start focusing on the generational gap, because it's really younger Black voters that are frustrated, that are rightfully cynical, you know, that feel like the system has failed them, both sides, both Democrats and Republicans have failed them, and they're beginning to shop for alternatives.
If you have a cessation of fire in Gaza, and I'm not sure this would ever happen, but if for some reason you were able to rein in cost, grocery prices, et cetera, does Biden win this race in a landslide?
I think that we are beyond landslide elections. I don't think that that's going to happen in this country for a very long time. Because of the five or six states that determine the outcomes, right? They are swing states. I mean, they being determined by less than 1 or 2 points by definition means that they can swing either way. The swing, though, that's happening is not folks swinging between Democrats and Republicans. It's who's turning out. You know, the swing in these states is just, are their voters turning out more than our voters? We're really not switching voters between these two parties. What concerns me the most to your question about does Biden win in a landslide? It's the third party vote, right? It is the threat of a third party defection. The only thing less popular than either one of these two candidates is the rematch of these two candidates.
Yeah.
And so we see folks beginning to, especially young people. And look, it's even more than just they don't want to vote for these two guys, Bakari. The rematch is indicative. It is proof in the pudding that the system is broken, right? For a cynical voter that says the system don't work, seeing these two men in a rematch is validating that the system isn't working. And that's what concerns me with the third party defection, is that they don't think they're wasting their vote voting third party. They think that this is the only way to fix the system, to hasten the revolution. You remember that shit?
Who is the third party that causes the most consternation, or should cause the most consternation? I mean, I know Michigan is, if Cornel West gets on a ballot, that's a huge problem for Joe Biden. But talk about Cornel West throughout the country, or is it Robert F. Kennedy?
I mean, obviously all the polling right now is saying Robert F. Kennedy. That's because he's a household name that has raised more than I think any third party candidate in history. Yeah. So he's going to be well funded. Cornel West in most polling, even in our polling, isn't getting above single digits, 2 or 3%. I think that changes when people start to meet Cornel West. I think as he starts to make his way around college campuses, which he knows his way around a college campus real well, mm-hmm. and starts to say the things that these cynical voters believe, that the system is broken and that the biggest problem is the two-party system, and possibly even, you know, calling the president Genocide Joe. You know, when he starts to say the things that young people are saying, I'm afraid that he's going to resonate. And so we got to have an answer to that. And the answer is not to just disqualify Cornel West. We got to have a better answer than that.
But is it resonating with people who actually vote? Because we're talking about young people again, but are they actually turning out? Talk about, are young voters turning out more? Because for a while, you know, over a 20-year period, young voters would make a lot of noise, but they would forget to show up in November. Are we seeing that dynamic change?
Yeah, we are. Abortion is changing that. 2022 changed that. Young people care a lot about abortion. In Michigan, the only state that had abortion on the ballot in 2022, I think across the nation, somewhere between 55 to 65% of the young people that voted in 2018 came back and voted in 2022. Mm-hmm. In Michigan, instead of 55 to 65%, it was 94% of young people came back. All of them, all the young people that voted in 2018 came back in 2022. That's the power of abortion when it's on the ballot with young people. And so I do think it's the threat of losing abortion rights that I do think is going to mobilize, keep them coming. And I think it's going to keep them from defecting third party as well, or could.
Yeah, let me ask you about this messaging before we jump over to Black men, Black women again. But this messaging that, like in Michigan, for example, there's a theory that white progressives hold that Black and brown voters won't jump over. They won't jump from Joe Biden to Donald Trump because he's simply worse on the issue. My argument is that that may be right, but they would stay home. I mean, who is right in that argument, or is there something more analytical or something deeper we need to be thinking about?
So again, I want to be really specific about which Black voters we're talking about. The overwhelming majority of Black voters, 70 to 80% on election day this year, are going to vote for Joe Biden, overwhelmingly, more than any other group. The 30% that we're talking about are this cynical, and again, I call them rightfully cynical because they're closest to the pain, you know, lowest income, lowest education. The system has not worked for them. For that voter, you know, this is who they've been calling the double hater, right? But what they're getting wrong with the double hater, Bakari, is that they don't just hate Donald Trump and Joe Biden. They hate Democrats and Republicans. They hate politicians. They hate churches. They hate hospitals. They hate they hate vaccines. They hate 5G. You know what I mean? Like, this is all the same person that doesn't trust any of these systems. For that person, you know, there's a risk of them staying home. There's a risk of them going for the guy that's saying the system is broken, who might be Donald Trump, who might be Cornel West, who might be Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's also, they could vote for Joe Biden. I believe that young cynical voter that doesn't like either is the voter that's going to determine the outcome of this election.
Gotcha. Do you see a difference between what Black men and Black women are telling you they want or telling you they want to see?
We were, you know, prior to 2022, Black men were overwhelmingly prioritizing economic issues over social issues. So things like racism and critical race theory and climate change, those things weren't resonating with Black men as much because of the economic anxiety and the urgency to put food on the table, provide for the family. And to a large extent, that's still true. Black men prioritize economic issues. The exception to that is abortion. Since the overturning of Roe, Black people, not just Black men, Black people's attitudes on abortion has evolved tremendously. Mm-hmm. Black men in Ohio in November of 2023 had an abortion ballot measure, issue one. Black men supported that ballot measure more than anybody in Ohio, even more than Black women. 87% of Black men voted yes on issue one in Ohio. Sherrod Brown hopes that he gets 87% of Black men's votes in Ohio, but abortion just did 6 months ago. That's the power that this issue has across the electorate, across the Black electorate. Other than that, you know, the issues are pretty similar. It's the cost of things, the crime, the public safety issues, but overwhelmingly, this issue of abortion is just beginning to cut across age, geography, and the Black community.
You said something last time we were together about the way that you should message the issue of abortion. Can you talk to that a little bit, particularly for Black voters, when it comes to kind of the conservative bent or religious bent that sometimes is the best way to frame this discussion?
Absolutely, Bakari. You know, a part of where Democrats have to shore up their most loyal voters is by but their most loyal voters are Black folks. I'm sure everybody listening knows that, but a part of what they need to do to shore that up, to shore up that coalition that people keep suspecting is splintering, is to reclaim some of the values that Black folks hold dear. Values like spirituality, family, masculinity, you know? And there's a way to message very, very progressive issues that some Black men might not go along with through very, very Black-ass values. And an example of that is, you know, framing abortion through a religious value. If God granted us all freedom of choice, then why should government grant women any less than that? You know, or a masculine value as the head of my household. You know, that's just a deeply held, that's probably something my father believes more than anything except for Jesus, is that he's the head of his household, you know? And that comes with a responsibility to protect my wife and my daughter from intrusive governments that tell them when they can start a family. So there is a way to reclaim those values. We got to want to reclaim God and want to reclaim masculinity and stop treating it like it's all toxic.
I hope everybody heard that. When you think of a course correction for Black voters that are on the fence about Biden, what does that look like? And what do they need to do and say?
Again, I'm going to laser focus on that cynical voter.
Yeah, cynical voter, yeah.
Yeah, that rightfully cynical Black voter who says his hood ain't getting no better under Obama, it ain't getting no worse under Trump. So what Biden got to do with him? For that voter, the only way to cut through that cynicism, it's not a message, man. And I get Democrats come to me all the time, but they come to his strategies and say, what's the message for Black folks? This ain't a message problem. Instead of a message about how we made their lives better, we have to start making their lives better. And we do that through, I've been calling it click here messaging, right? When we needed their votes, we put in the palm of their hand, click here to find your ballot, to request your ballot, click here to find your polling place, click here to request a ride. We will come and take you to vote. Well, now they need a click here to see if they qualify for child tax credits. Click here to see every lead water pipe being replaced in their community. Click here to see a list of pharmacies that offer $35 insulin. And if you can't find it, we'll come pick you up and take you to go get that $35 insulin. When we needed something for them, we were willing to pull up at their house and help them. Now they need the cynical voter doesn't need a message. They need our help. And to be fair, you know, this administration has passed the policies. Look, I'll go as far, Bakari, to say, I think this administration has done more with policy and with personnel to improve the material lives of Black folks than any president in my lifetime. Mm. It don't matter if Black folks can't access it, you know?
That's a hell of a point. Again, the last question of substance for you. Do you think the campaign effectively utilizes my amazing Vice President Kamala Harris with Black voters? And if not, what would that look like?
I think we are certainly starting to see her emerge more in this role. You know, Kamala Harris has a unique role to play with Black folks, with young folks. She represents the future of the party. She's a generational shift in the party. And Joe Biden acknowledged that when he chose her. I think he actually said, Kamala Harris is the future of the Democratic Party. I think to better activate her with Black folks and with the electorate more broadly, it's got to be showing her as ready to be president. You know, the biggest concern that people have with Joe Biden is his age, is his longevity. And I think showing a president, and we even see Republicans attacking this, right? We saw Nikki Haley talking about if you vote for Joe Biden, it's a vote for Kamala, you know, then you're voting for a Kamala Harris presidency. Well, let's just lean into that. What would a Kamala Harris presidency look like? What is the future that Kamala sees for this country? And so I think while Joe Biden defends his record and tells people about what he's been doing, Kamala Harris has an opportunity to start talking about the future. Not only the next 4 years, but the next 40. And what does the nation look like?
Terrence Woodbury, how can people follow you, find you, find your stats, your studies, everything that you do, your focus groups, hit strategies? How can people hire you? All the things. Tell them.
Yes, man. Look, we are on all the socials. We put a lot of data out on Twitter, at HitStrat. You can also go to the website, www.hitstrat.com. We believe in research as a public good, so we're putting as much of it out as possible. Use us up.
Definitely. I love you, Terrence. Have a great day. Tell your barber I said what's happening.
Thank you so much, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
See you soon.
Later, man.